as an immigrant, and I really want to emphasize on this, as an immigrant, I've been meant to believe that people who are pro-guns, for one, are all white supremacists. They only want white people to have guns.
You don't have to take all of the baggage that comes with it. You can just do, but there has to be a certain amount of commitment to it, right? And the hard part is getting the buy-in.
I'll pull the shine out of you, even though you didn't know you had one. Like, I'll make everyone happy there. Like, because it works.
That was never designed to do anything other than sweep people up into a dragnet. And like, it's the hole that the government has you dig and refill.
While waving, you know, walking around with his gun. No, I'm here to collect money. And one of the customers pulls out his gun and shoots him. Right? And the comments under that are all like, well, why he... I'm sorry. The comments were, first of all, why did he have to kill him? He wasn't in an immediate danger of his life. And hello, everyone. A little reminder, this is hashtag team no delusion. Nothing is edited. Nothing is polished up. Everything is raw. Everything is straight imported onto the podcast because I don't want to participate in none of that Hollywood nonsense. Everything has to look perfectly. Everything has to look fake. Everything has to look a certain way. So you'll get the raw version. A little before we go into the episode, I've been having and receiving lots of requests on information like what are my offerings right now, what's happening, what will be happening. And as I am currently kind of in a, aside from being in a rebranding, I'm trying to figure out and level up my own methods right now. So there will be another Dollar Academy, which is the money for 6 months. I'm currently practicing and working and refining methods for a discipline room, how to become a luck magnet. I have redneck magic coming up. I have rural life. I have Louboutin riches. I have everything. Everything is coming up. Be sure to be subscribed to my email list on thedollaracademy.com. And if you can't find it or if it's too much effort, just hit me with a DM and just give me your name and email and I'll put you there on manually myself. I have lots of good stuff coming from tiny luck exponential magnet amplifications for like $9 to several thousand dollar programs. So I promise you, I'm trying to cater to as broad as possible and I'm trying to get everyone involved. So yeah, get involved and I can't wait to see you in. It's your favorite opinionated, super legendary super sloth. And we've been out mostly because I've been traveling. And by traveling, I'm meaning moving across country to an undisclosed location. Clearly, I don't have my official setup yet, but if as winners can depend on having perfect circumstances. So we're finally here again with the Diamond and Demon series. Kelly, we are a few weeks into the new year. How epic is the new year?
So far, so good. Like, it's actually all right. I mean, other than, like, we were talking about just a little bit of a, you know, a cold, but other than that, like, things are going pretty good, so I like it.
So perhaps you didn't know because you're not in there, but I have officially dipped into the Twitter world.
Oh.
And I am mostly, and I feel like it's going to give us just forever to talk about, so oh, which 100%. Is good.
God bless you for your sacrifice. Because I ain't doing that.
So I knew none of that.
I ain't touching that shit. But good to you. The dumpster fire.
Oh my God. Two fucking fire. So I am in the Second Amendment anti-government type of corner of Twitter.
Oh, okay.
Which ironically actually brings up really good conversations. Yeah. And right now, and obviously Twitter is very polarizing. Left versus right, and you know, left is the weak links, which I agree, and the right just wants everyone to suffer, which I disagree. But I still think both parties are clown show because it's still in the same circus, right? But this morning there was this conversation, which is trending, about Social Security. Oh, and for the record, I'm doing a whole America series soon. And I'm going down to Independence, you know, Declaration, Bill of Rights, I'm going down everything. Because as an immigrant, and I really want to emphasize on this, as an immigrant, I've been meant to believe that people who are pro-guns, for one, are all white supremacist. They only want white people to have guns. Again, I have no idea even where that came from. So, you know, now being not only living extremely rural, but having been already pro-gun for quite a while, I'm now in hindsight finding all the like misconceptions and like the lies I've been told, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm also learning about all the presidents and what they are, you know, what they stood for, what they are standing for, whether it's idealistic or not. And so I'm this week, the topic on Twitter has been Social Security. Right. And you and I, we are definitely all in the team taxes theft. But what it did bring up was some great conversations. And I made a poll on my Facebook and my social media as well. It's like, let's say we would have a authority figure, a country daddy that's actually for the people. Right. So I'm always assuming it would be significantly smaller scale. Because the city people can never represent the rural people and vice versa. But let's say we'd actually have people who have been on the front lines with us, who have been part of the part that they're governing, right? So, you know, actual farmers being part of the agriculture minister or whatever the fuck that is, right? How much would we as an individual would be willing to pay and I don't want to call it taxes because taxes are theft, but what percentage would we be willing to pay if we would 100% have a transparency and perhaps even choice as to where that money is going? And I came up with I'd be easily game for 50 or 60%. Because there's something to make money for yourself, but it directly having an amazing impact on others. Oh, that's like from all sides drive for me. Mm-hmm. And I would even love it for it to be like a point system where I can choose click, 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 click. I want my money to go to these things. Right. Mm-hmm. What would you be okay with?
I think the first thing for me to back into that number would be to know what the scope of power and work is for the government to begin with. Is it, like, if we were looking at the United States, let me back up a second. The United States is a federation of states. So it's supposed to be like the EU, where each state is an independent nation state, right? And we were supposed to, originally, prior to several amendments later, if you just went Articles of Confederation in the top 10 and stopped there, the state legislatures were voting for senators. It was never a popular vote. That changed later, right? So the senators were representing the states. And that's why everybody got two, because every state is equal. And then you had representatives based on population, and that's the House. And so when you think about what is the Federation's main goal? To preserve the Federation, right? Preserve the Federation and to keep the Union going. So the only thing that the federal government should actually be involved in is making sure that everything runs smoothly. They're supposed to be the laxative that keeps everything moving through, so to speak. Okay, keep shit moving. That's their job. That's it. So the Commerce Clause was supposed to be, look, have reciprocity agreements. Let's make sure that Arizona and New Mexico can cooperate in commerce and let things pass through. And let's not get all hung up on, oh, you're from New Mexico, you need a passport to get in. No, we're going to have some sort of reciprocity agreement between states to keep commerce going and keep that, you know, the supply chain unencumbered, right? That was part of that. Okay. That makes sense. That's your job. Making sure that any sort of intrusion external to the nation that posed a threat, that we would have defense against that. Okay. If there's any sort of violation that happens across state lines, that there would be one place that they could go to arbitrate and make that work. So when you think about what the federal government should be doing, right, And I'm going to take a minute and just take the status position and say, okay, if we're going to have this institution, what is their job? Their job is really just to make sure shit doesn't go downhill. That's it. So the checklist is very short on a federal level, okay? Which means, would I pay for a Supreme Court to adjudicate the interpretation of the Constitution? Yeah, okay, fine. I'll check that box. Would I pay to make sure that there was some sort of, some sort of coalition to make sure that all states were cooperating on interstate commerce? Yeah, I would. I would pay for something like that, you know? And from a practical standpoint, this is reasonable requests. You know, would I pay for national defense? Yes. National offense? No, right? So I would pay for us to defend our here, but no fucking dragon hunting across the sea. That shit, right? Of course. And by and large, people would be on board with that. Like, you'd have a really hard time trying to tell people not to fund that. But when it comes down to, like, anything beyond, and that can all be handled at about 5%, 5 to 10% flat tax. Everybody throws in 5 to 10% flat tax, and that's it. That could all be paid for easily, by the way. When you start getting into public welfare, that becomes more regional, right?
Yeah,
the welfare.
That's why I specifically mentioned, like, it needs to be really goddamn small. Maybe I'm not sure if, like, we're talking like county can already be too big.
Right. So it would have to be. So when you start talking about the welfare of people, right? And I'm not talking about welfare like food stamps. I'm talking about just the well-being of your society and your community. What you might need in the city is not going to be the same as what you need in rural America, which means
that's where the
real checklist comes in, right? So from a localized perspective, right? So let's say the state says, we have a constitution that doesn't violate the federal, but builds on that and says, we don't have a death penalty and we have no gun control. We have no laws against guns. You don't need a background check. Like New Hampshire has something similar. Arizona was very close to that. You know, like it was just, you know, there were basic check boxes, but it wasn't anything massive. California, on the other hand, has all sorts of shit, right? But I think that's where states will start to define further how they are going to carry out the Constitution that they've agreed to participate in, right? And then from there, you get to smaller areas where it's like, okay, now we're talking about individuals. We're getting down almost to the individual level, the cities, right? Counties have their place, and that's more like, and the only reason why a county matters is because you have unincorporated territories that don't belong to a city. And that's when the county comes into play. The county otherwise doesn't mean anything. So if you're down to the prefecture level of a city, then that's where we can start talking about whether or not you'd start checking boxes for various public funding. Right. And assuming it all goes off without a hitch. And so what you're basically suggesting from what I'm hearing is that they have a monopoly on charity. Right. That there becomes a government monopoly on charity that I'm giving 50%. You can't give 50% and then say, I got another 25% for the House of Ruth. No, you don't. You just give 50%. At this point, your taxes become I gave at the office. I already gave. I'm done. Right.
Yeah.
So you're choosing government implemented and administered charity over private charity is essentially how this looks at the end.
So that that's going down to nitty gritty, which is great. For me, it starts with an energetic experiment with, again, and I know this is utopic, but I think, having conversations and thought experiments like this elaborates us to think outside of firstly, the current system, which is beyond flawed. It's corrupt. It's against people, right? Mm-hmm. So it already take back, like, if we were pro people, and for context, even though I'm, you know, for the internet, I'm on an undisclosed location. My town has 280 people. The town next door has 1400 people. We have one bus that comes like three times a day. There is local snow plowing. Nearest city, both direction is 2 hours drive, and the city's both direction drive are 100,000 people. And so ironically, even like going to already such small cities, it's horrible. Like homelessness, we don't have that here in these small towns, right? Again, for context, my nearest neighbor is, you know, 5-minute drive. So even within that, and we're in the same county as those nearest cities, completely already different. That's why, you know, I said county might be already too big, but even like, so let's say I would have to, you know, or I would be willing to hand out the 50%, like I would directly see the evidence of that, right? Like I would, what are some of the biggest problems? Okay, so definitely the senior people here, because the local economy took a, you know, plummeted, I guess like 7 years ago. So there's no really like safety net or even allocation for people who actually do want to work. There's a great work etiquette here, and people definitely take on whatever they can find, but not always at, you know, with success or sufficient enough. So I would even go down to, I'm game for it to go down towards what we perhaps now call social housing, or I would perhaps even like, you know, we'd be willing to build my own little village and be like, hey, this is affordable. How? Absolutely willing. Because I can see that the people here are real. They're like work ethic is in their veins, right? So it's not by lack of a, you know, I'm lazy, like living my best YOLO life. It's literally like the external circumstances don't allow growth anymore because there was an economic turnover. Ironically, healthcare, I'm not even sure because, you know, nearest hospitals are 2 hours both direction. I would like to see something like a, I don't know, maybe like a small town doctor that handles something like here.
So I can see all of those. We could list off needs like shelter and food and healthcare, all those basic needs, right? And say, okay, we can agree that those are needs that people have 100%. Certainly to a greater degree, the senior population, perhaps disability, like legit disability, you know, maybe even parents of children who have disabilities and they're just trying to make it work. All of that. I mean, I could think of 100 scenarios where like, it's legit. They really are in need, right?
But I need you to list those because as we are somewhat, you and I will definitely, for the normies, we definitely be considered right, which again, we both are kind of like, y'all are all batshit crazy. So I want to move away from this, like, because we are all pro, like, work fucking harder. Right. Get, like, the world is how it is. Get fucking at it. It's not going to change. Right. And we can also hold like, okay, but we really value these necessities. And we, again, in this utopic government that we are just playfully crafting right now, these would definitely be points that we'd stand for.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, a person who gets injured on the job and can't work and has some disability, somebody has chronic illness and, you know, whatever. Caretakers also have this whole thing where they're taking care of their mom. They're fine, but their mother is ailing and whatever. There's scenarios that life just gets really fucking hard. And I can appreciate all of those scenarios and accept them as real. I'm not in denial of tribulation and hardship and the costs that come with that. Now the question is about the administration in terms of how we help them, right? Because simply giving your money to it isn't going to fix it. I can't keep throwing money at you and expecting poverty to go away if you don't know how to manage money. So if let's say somebody's like, you know what? I fell on hard times. I want to work. I really do. I want to work. And it's like, okay. I mean, I've talked about this with Chris before, where it's like the able-bodied person who wants to work, you know what? Give them a 6-month program where they don't have bills, right? And all they do is they work and they go to training of some sort, whatever it is, a trade, right, of some sort. And this is what you do all day, every day. And you work as hard as you can, as many jobs as you can, and and every dime you make goes into a savings account. You have no bills, but we hold it in an escrow account so you don't spend it. In the meantime, you are also undergoing a training program on how to budget your money. So I'm not cutting you a fucking check the way it is now. No, no, you're making your own money. I'm paying your bills. And no money ever reaches the person who has no idea how to manage money. That person doesn't get to handle shit that they can't handle, you know?
Right.
And, so that's a possible framework or model. But then you, if you gave somebody that option and said, this is how it works, and this is what we do here, and then they're off of it in 6 months, most people would donate to that, whether it was government run or otherwise.
Well, and this is the thing, right? On a small scale, what happens when you govern, and I'm using air quotes for the listeners right now, when you govern on small scale, is that the social culture becomes really strong, because no one will allow you, like Becky from fucking Trailer Trash, to just sit on her ass, because we paid into it. So there's a social net and a connection of accountability and, right, like, and also safety, right? Because like, we see that, you know, Alexandra really got hurt or her mom's struggling. Oh, we want to help, but we will not tolerate because it's so close. And I want to give an example of, there's several Polish cities and the majority of East Europe fucking the majority of Europe scrutinizes Polish cities for this. So if you manage to get on welfare in certain Polish cities, you'll get the money. However, you'll be cleaning the city all day, like 8 hours a day, resulting in that you'll never get out of the workforce, right? So you'll, there's a rhythm to your day. The cities are so, I would eat off the floor there. I'm not kidding you. The cities look taken care of. And it, and the thing is, it's not being looked at as a punitive, right? Like, oh my God, I have to, but it, like, I'm part of the net that helps me survive at this moment.
Right?
So you, I'm participating, right? Yeah. Because in that same breath, I'm, you know, people who are on welfare and who keep fucking breeding kids, hell the fuck no, are you fucking kidding? I understand that, you know, sterilizing and those conversations become significantly too bad, but you're definitely not doing that, like breeding like rabbits off of my money.
Correct.
Right?
Right, right, exactly. And I think that's the thing, is it's like, if you come up with a model that works, that doesn't look like Munchausen by proxy on an industrial scale, where people are like, well, I can't ever really fix poverty, because if I do, I'm out of a job, right? The solution actually unemploys. So, okay, so I have to manage and maintain your sickness in order for me to keep my job and stay relevant. That's
California,
like, right?
A lot of cities in California, right, where they're fixing homelessness, they're throwing several billies against it.
Yeah.
But nothing's happened.
Correct.
Nothing's happened.
Because it's maintenance and management. I can't have you die, right? You can't die, but you can't be saved either. I can't fix you.
So I'll hire poop scoopers. I'll hire poop scoopers for the human feces, but not, I won't fix the problem.
But I won't fix what's actually having people shit in the streets in the first place, right? So like
right.
that, and so that's the issue that is currently corrupting our welfare programs, is that people feel really good about the fact that their taxes go towards all this noble shit, but that's not what it actually does. And that's the problem. That's the grift. So if you're going to have a thing where you're checking boxes and saying, I'd be glad to participate and I'd be glad to pay for X, Y, and Z, typically, in order to for people to feel good about it, they would need to see how it runs. To your point, there is an accountability and a visibility into that.
Transparency,
right?
Yeah.
Right. So what would I be willing to give toward? I'd be willing to give toward all sorts of things, provided it was properly managed, right? I mean, and I'd do that privately if it didn't exist in a government. Like, but we would do it regardless. You know, like, that's the thing. It doesn't have to be the government doing it. In fact, it makes more sense for it not to be centralized. It makes more sense for it to be disparate, because then at least I know that if it was if this piece was mismanaged, other stuff is still operating just fine. But if it's all handled by the same body of people, if there's mismanagement here, odds are there's mismanagement over here as well, because it's the same group of fuckwits that can't manage. So that's my thing, is I'm more about decentralized direct aid than as a model and as a general premise for distribution of resources than I am toward having it centralized. That to me, there's just a lot of room for a lot of shit to go very wrong.
Right. And I feel that, because for listeners, for the context, you live in a city right now. You come from a city too?
Yeah, I come from LA.
Right. Okay. Right. So I feel, because for me, on a budget scale and using, like, I come from a, like, born and raised in Hicktown, 117 people, right? Like, mm-hmm. it would be so easy to, because transparency, like, again, we're just 10 people sitting, you know, a town hall. We didn't even have a town hall, but, like, you know, going to the barn of fucking the neighbor and, like, that would be our town hall meeting would be easy.
Right.
And then it's like, this is the budget. Give me your points. Hell, even we could even use envelopes and be like, okay, this is my envelope and I'm putting it towards this point, right? Like, that's significantly easy. So I definitely think scaling is a huge problem. Aside from the corruption, right? I'm just putting that aside, but just scaling in general.
Yeah. It's you're looking at a model similar to the Amish, right? The Amish have a very, they don't have a centralized, I mean, they share a faith, but they don't have a centralized church. So each ordnung is separate, right? And they have their own council, and that's it. They have a council. They don't have a government, they have elders, and there's a general culture that has them helping each other out, and they're fucking building barns in 3 days and bridges in a day. I mean, they're without technology, they're doing this shit, right? They're doing this with joinery and, like, no buttons.
Imagine if you had the buttons and the technology.
Yeah. So it's clearly possible to do this. But I think part of it requires not just a good structure and a good model, but it also requires a bit of cultural continuity. Like, they have a shared ethic.
Yeah.
There is no deviation from the ethic. They are still a depiction of, like, puritanical America. Okay. So they are united under this, and they are and it's very consistent. There is no progressive Amish. That's not a thing. So if you've got that and the same is true. If you believe it or not, there is actually a documentary that shows how the Mormon church works in terms of its welfare program. It is actually very, very efficient and very cost effective. There's a whole documentary about it on PBS that talks about what they bought up land. The Mormon church bought up land so that they could farm, so that they could can their own goods and create actual grocery stores within all of their temples that they allow people to come in and grab what they need. And that's it. No questions asked. They just come in and people can go into a Mormon church and literally just go grocery shopping. And the Mormons grew it, harvested it, canned it. They have a whole factory to do it. I mean, it's insane what they've got. And people don't know this, but they did this all on their own accord. It's part of their religion that they fast once a week. And what they would have spent on that meal goes towards this grocery
store. Beautiful.
Yeah. So it's possible to do it. And they can do it well. And we've seen examples of good execution of proper charity and welfare programs. I just think that the idea that, you know, because I don't want to support how it is now, that I don't care is really, they're two different things. You know, my opposition to these programs as they are now has nothing to do with whether I care about poverty. It's that I do care about poverty, but I'm not trying to join them by supporting a lost cause, you know? So that's, you know, there is a difference, and I don't think people make that distinction.
Right, because everyone's polarized now and just screaming at each other and using, like, hip terms. And I wonder, like, a great point you made is that it requires a culture to have a perhaps not even unified, but somewhat of the same values. And for a lot of these communities, it's a religion, right? However, and I think, and obviously this is just a thought experiment, and I have the feeling that it could work even without religion based on where you choose to live, right?
Japan does it. It's a secular country, and they have a continuity, and they have a very unified approach to welfare, where culturally they're not compelled to defraud the system or take advantage. They are culturally compelled to not do that. Like, and that's just how they are. And that has nothing to do with religion. That is just straight culture. So,
Could you tell me, for listeners, Kelly is half Japanese, lived in Japan too, so she knows significantly more close up from the culture than just the hearsay and Twitter phrases than the majority does. So, because Japan has a very strong working culture, right? And yeah, can you say more about any of that, like perspective towards welfare or like governments? I don't like right. anything. Yeah.
So respect and honor is a big thing throughout Asia in general, right? That is broad strokes. Every Asian culture has this. And so as such, I mean, Japan has a history of when it had a state religion, it had Shinto. And Shinto was very much about taking pride in being clean, being orderly, being, you know, it was almost made a religion out of cleanliness is next to godliness. That's like kind of like that's very reductive, but it is what it is. But that's kind of what it was. And so you have still a lingering vestige of that, which is like almost a superstition toward deviating off of that. So they never really came up. So yes, they don't have Shinto anymore, but they still have that culture ingrained in them. So the cultural remnants of the religion is there, right? And that's mm-hmm. all that's left. So they still take off their shoes when they go into each other's homes and stuff like that. And they still clean up. And with that respect aspect and the honor aspect, you can have, they have found a cultural path forward where you have hierarchies, but you have humility at the same time. So it is not uncommon for a CEO of a large corporation to greet their janitors in the honorific language. Oh, Honorable Yamamoto, how is your family? I remember your name. I ask about your family. I ask about your well-being. And I talk to you about the weather. And I do all of these things, because that is the respectful thing to do, and I'm not above that shit. Like, as the CEO, I might be running all sorts of game over here, but I'm never above acknowledging the fact that were it not for this janitor, I'd be cleaning those toilets. Because it's my job to make sure this whole company is taken care of, right down to the fucking toilets. And you're doing this for me, and you're doing this benevolently for me, and I appreciate you. I watched that happen where the president of the university was where I was at, literally stopped what he was doing in the middle of a conversation with some professors to greet the janitor and take the time to do that. And the professors were like, well, of course he is. And then we're all going to greet you as well. And then we're going to wait our turn and we're going to do that.
I'm goosebumping here. Goosebumping.
Yes. But you see what, that's not religion. That's their culture. That's what they do. So then if I, as the CEO, appreciate you and what your contribution is to this company, and I don't treat you as disposable, and I don't treat you as nobody because you don't have status, right? Then, yes, I'm the CEO, and I have that status in the company. But as a person, I recognize your humanity and that we are, in fact, equal. They talk like this. In terms of their welfare, in terms of all of that. So when they have socialized programs, like my mom loves Japan. She keeps saying, why can't you be more like, you know, why can't we be more like Japan? I said, because we suck. It's not the same. Like culturally, we don't appreciate each other. Culturally, we look down our noses at each other. Culturally, we are inclined to take advantage of every possible thing, and we see no continuity between ourselves. We don't feel unified at all. I said, so Japan is very unified in the fact that it's like, wait, if I'm drawing from the system, I better put into it. I need to put something into it. I can't just take and not give. There's shame in this. It's dishonorable. Like, this is how, I mean, it's so dishonorable. I mean, you've also got a culture that says you'd be better off just taking your own life than to bring dishonor. So it gets extreme.
So there's, sure.
There's lines. Right. There's lines.
We're not glorifying it, right? But we're playing with which parts of culture can be amplified and hopefully, right?
Right.
And the thing is, and what I want to emphasize that I've traveled to, what, 48 countries, 45 states. I've lived in 9 countries, meaning actual residency, which, you know, broadens. You cherry pick your identity by doing that, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people simply don't have that luxury. So I feel it's important for us to discuss these different cultures and experiences so people get exposed to that and be like, oh, what do I actually feel, think about that? And how can I incorporate that? Without it turning into a cultural extreme.
Right, exactly. You don't have to take all of the baggage that comes with it. You can just do, but there has to be a certain amount of commitment to it, right? And the hard part is getting the buy-in. You know, I think what Americans have a hard time with is, I'm only nice to you if you're nice to me. I'm only going to respect you if you respect me first. And I'm expecting quid pro quo all the time. Mm-hmm. Contrast that with, I'm the type of person who's respectable, and I comport myself in a respectable way, regardless of how feral you might be. So you can be frothing at the mouth and going off, you know, and being your ratchety ass, and that's fine. I'm still going to compose myself because I'm the type of person that's composed and respectable, and I don't let you decide and dictate for me how I'm going to live. And that's the difference, is that Americans are waiting for tit for tat instead of saying, I am just this. I identify as a respectable person, and therefore I live my life that way, regardless of how you behave. And when everybody makes that decision, they end up falling in line.
Well, and coming back to the American culture in that, it's a lot of, well, you first give me fire, then I'll go get the wood. And I'm like, no.
Right.
That's not the same version. I'll be respectful if. Right. It's very reactive. Right. Yep. It's a very reactive thing. And it's interesting to coming then from like an East European criminal background culture I come from a part where not being reactive can even be perceived as weak. Right. Because you don't dare to correct another, right? Or it's being perceived as like, oh, you don't have the balls to correct or something. So it's been for me it was an extreme journey, right? From going and fighting with anyone and arguing with everyone, like, because how dare you fucking disrespect me, to now where I'm like, well, now, you know, now I have the traditional phrase, if you're below my tax bracket, you can fucking upset me or whatever. Because like, I have to be cautious, like, who I like.
Access paywall. Now you have a paywall.
Now there's a paywall. But it's so I rarely rant about this, but I posted a rant on Facebook this week where I had to deal with a government institute. The thing is, you know me in person. I'm the most extrovert motherfucker you find out there. Like, I'm a people person. So I'm bringing my people person myself into this government institute, and I'm already being met with cranky face. I'm like, I got that. I got you. I'll pull the shine out of you, even though you didn't know you had one. Like, I'll make everyone happy there. Like, because it works often. No, it always works. But clearly these people having a significantly bad day and observing my inner dialogue, right? So for one, it's like, I'm not going to participate in their crankiness. That's because right. Then I'm just reacting. But having to hold that tension, because God, it would feel so good.
To just let this.
Because again, honestly, in the hierarchy of being cranky or, you know, humiliating, like, I made it a career. Like, you can't, like, if we're going to play that card, I made it an actual career. Like, it made me rich. Like, I'm good at it. So there's this, like, constant dance, inner dance, where I'm like, oh, I just want to, like, I want to put you in your place. But again, coming back, but then I'll be reacting, which means that they are dictating how I am feeling and responding.
And they're not paying for it.
Right. So it was interesting just as an experiment, like, hey, it doesn't matter how I conduct myself. These people are still behaving shitty. Hold the line.
Yeah. Hold the fuck.
Not
line.
For them.
No, for
me.
You. That's correct. That's right.
For me.
Because I don't compromise myself for assholes. Least of all for assholes. Like, you know, I mean, and I think, and to your, and, you know, kind of touching a little bit off the point that you had made earlier about the, you know, coming from a you know, a criminal culture, right? Even in criminal culture, there is culture.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
And when they talk about organized crime, that's because it is very fucking organized and very fucking like tight.
Very clear. Very everyone's role is very clear. How one is behaving. No.
And everybody chooses it. These people choose it. They 100%. Choose life. And I'm like, you've chosen this. This is, you choose. But the reality is that I was told the rules up front. And I was told right. This is how it is. And no, there's right. No big surprise. I know what pisses people off and I know what doesn't. And right. The idea, you know, and to a great degree, oddly enough, criminal enterprises have done more to keep crime in check than the government, which it can be argued that the government itself is a criminal enterprise. But nonetheless, when you talk about private sector criminal organizations have done more to keep crime at bay than the actual government. And yeah. They do so because it's like, don't fuck with my shit. Everybody's just doing what they need to do right now. And when you come in that's the hold that the mafia has over Las Vegas and like Atlantic City. No petty crime. We don't do petty crime here. I don't want to see assault. I don't want to see pickpocketing. I don't want to see any of that shit. I see any of that shit, I will come for you. And the same thing with the Yakuza. The Yakuza does that in Japan. They keep them in check. It's like, no, you don't get to do petty shit because you're going to ruin my bigger shit. And my bigger shit is more important than any petty shit you got going on. So you can take that and bounce. Or I'll fucking kill you. I don't give a shit, but I'm cleaning this stuff up. And they do. So like, Al Capone was known for his soup kitchens. He was feeding the poor out of his own pocket and offering soup and soup kitchens and bread lines to people who are down and out. He was doing, Al Capone is a known mafia, badass. And he's still feeding the poor. Like they were doing a lot. It's crazy. Right. But it's like,
well, it brings us to a moral crossroads, more closely. When I just moved to Mexico 2 years ago, that was the end wave of their COVID restriction. And the government has given a big middle finger to everyone. And the local cartel was feeding everyone in the town every day. A week later, they also killed a politician that they didn't agree with. Right. So again, like you find yourself on a moral crossroad. And having dated a Mexican politician who was absolutely convinced that he was going to do good, right? Mm-hmm. And like actual good. And it's a famous story now where at one point the cartel came, well, I love that you have great ideas, but this is not how we run things. So either you're going to fall in line or you're going to cease existing. And he had to jump out, right? He's like, I cannot compromise myself to participate in these politics because perhaps the beast is too big to be stopped at certain points, right?
Yeah.
But I do like the moral crossroads. Like, hey, okay, so these people are selling, you know, distributing a certain type of, you know, weapons, drugs, whatever. It's no different than the government. More specifically, yesterday I watched American Made with Tom Cruise.
Okay.
Have you watched?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. So it's based on true events where with Al Capone and Pablo Escobar. He's working for the CIA, flying weapons to Latin America, and then working for Escobar, flying in drugs to America. And you know, and again, it's all based on real life events, and Reagan's participation in that, and how the government, how everyone was in that, right? And I'm like, how is it that the country's daddy corruption is so transparent that it's even just being used now and displayed in movies for the sake of entertainment, and everyone's still like, okay, country daddy, why do you need me to spread?
Yeah.
And I'm like,
that wasn't the lesson. You did not understand the assignment. Damn. 3 hours deep, and the best you can do was, that's cool. Like, I mean, it's when it comes to things like prohibition, right, gun control, drug control, you know, any sort of prohibition. So we're talking even like, you know, the criminalization of prostitution, the criminalization of any number of things like, you know, alcohol and crossing state lines with tobacco products and shit, all of that, right? That was never designed to do anything other than sweep people up into a dragnet and like, it's the hole that the government has you dig and refill, basically. Yeah. Right. So that's it. It's like, you need to go get these people so that we can legitimize your existence here as a job or a task. And that's it. But it has disproportionately affected people of color, you know, gun control and drug prohibition 100% has targeted people of color. So it's like, mm-hmm. when you say that people, you know, when people say things like gun owners and 2A people are racist, it's like, no, because we're not the ones trying to disarm black people.
Exactly.
So, yeah. I'm like, dude, go get your ass a gun. Stay strapped. Like, you know,
especially if you're a minority.
And
regardless of what I perceive as violence or now, but if you perceive yourself as part of a minority to any, and you feel that there's violence against you, stack up and strap.
That's right. Stay strapped. I'm like, what the fuck? You know, and it's like, so I don't have an issue with black people having guns. Gun control people have issues with black people having guns. So it's like, I don't have to explain myself. Right. And that's, I think that goes back to something you had started off earlier, where it's like being for the people. Right. So there's that whole populism versus pluralism dichotomy that's happening, where it's like, we have to serve the people. And sometimes the people don't know what the fuck they're talking about, if we're going to be honest. But if we went the pluralistic route, then it's like, how many people can we include in this? How many people can be freed by this? How many people can have options by this and expanded and opened things up? It would be the difference between clenching sand and holding sand with an open palm. If you're holding sand with an open palm, more can be contained than if I squeeze my fist, right? So pluralism is the open palm. And so the more choices you have, the freer you are. That is the measurement of freedom. So
this is why a lot of people choose to make a lot of money, because they expand on their choices and options.
That's right. And I think people without money don't understand that. They think, oh, money will make me happy because money means I can pay my bills. And it's like, okay, like, you could pay your bills, but like, that's the bare minimum. Like, you should be paying your bills. You should be taking care of yourself. You should be self-sufficient. Money isn't what's going to fix your problem until your relationship with money changes. Like, your relationship with money is what's toxic and broken, you know, because you still see it as, as something that just pays your bills. You know, like, your expectations of what wealth can do for you is very remedial, right? As opposed to seeing money as just a means to an end. Like, it's like, no, now I have more options. I have more choices. I can go wherever I want. I can do this. I can do, you know, it's like, so now my options have expanded. That's what I got the money
for. Right. And I promise we will jump right back into the conversation and the episode. But in the meantime, I would like you to hit the like, hit the subscribe, hit the share. And mostly, get involved on my socials, get involved on my Instagram, get involved in the conversation on Facebook, get on my email list. You know how much I have been, let's say it, ostracized and removed from certain spaces. So if my Facebook one day disappears, you won't know where to find me. So get on my email list on thedollaracademy.com. Thank you so much. Meanwhile, snap a little picture of it, do a screenshot, share it on your Instagram, tag me. I will absolutely reshare. And any feedback and everything is possible is very welcome too. Thank you so much. And we need to absolutely acknowledge that in the way the world is set up, none of us are free. But freedom is a spectrum at this point, right? Like, depending on which country you live in, you are more free. Depending on what the amount of money you have, you are more free than others. Depending on what occupation you choose, right, you can be more free than others. But all of us still need a passport to cross the border, right? Or like to get on an airplane. Like we, regardless of how much money you have, you'll never be void of that. So there's no such thing as ultimate absolute freedom. It's a spectrum. And I feel like it's our individual duty to expand as much and take as much as space on that spectrum as we can. Whether, and again, and then you get into moral stuff, right? Whether you feel that you did that has to be a legal way or conform any morality. That's between you and your gods.
Right.
But that's the way the freedom spectrum operates, in my opinion. And I want to, again, because obviously guns are very, very big for me right now. So I apologize for bothering you with this. But did you hear that audio? It's a 2013 from Oregon where a woman calls 911. And there's a stalker, a known stalker, in front of her door trying to get in. He previously assaulted her, previously put her in the hospital. And the 911 operator says, "I'm sorry, I don't have anyone to send." And it is because the budget cut, like previously. And I have to really choose here to believe that the operator was coming from a good place, because she keeps repeating like, "Well, can you ask him to leave?" Right? And she ends up being raped. And I believe she ends up being killed, which, but there's a point in her, like, so the audio is like, I don't know, 10 minutes or something. And some YouTube channels have broken it down. I'll put a link in it in the notes. But there's a point where you hear in her, like, the realization that no one is coming.
Right.
And for everyone, and this, and I'm going to be polarizing now too, where the left is, you know, fuck cops, defund the police. That blood is on your hand. Where she, first of all, you need to be strapped, because cops only come later to collateral damage, collect, or collect a body.
Yeah, or take a report. Yeah.
And so we, and I was looking for that audio, and I put a post. I'm like, "Hey, can someone link me that audio?" And we started Googling Oregon woman, you know, not getting help. And it's like thousands of thousands of thousands of situations as late as two days ago. And I'm like,
no one's coming. You're the first responder to your own crisis. Like, that's the facts. I mean, if somebody broke into my house and I'm the one that's here, I'm the first responder, not the fucking cops. Cops, you know, when seconds matter, they're minutes away. And that's if there is somebody to send, right? And we don't even live in the worst possible scenario where, like, you know, like in other countries where it's like they can't get through the traffic. So even if they wanted to come and they did dispatch somebody, they wouldn't be able to, right? But in this in the case of something like that, again, you need choices. You need options, right? And if you had weapons and freaking tactical furniture, your ass would have them. But when the government says you can't have a gun to defend yourself, but also we can't send anybody to protect you, then essentially, yeah, the blood is on your hands. You said you were going to take responsibility for my safety in exchange for my guns. I trusted that, and then you didn't. So that is on you. You took that responsibility from me.
Yeah. You promised me. Yeah. Right? Because that's our contract. That's our contract. Mm-hmm. That's our contract. You get to take this away from me. And I'm okay using air quotes with that. But in exchange for that, you are taking, you're protecting, you are providing safety. And I know I've said this ad nauseum, and I'll endlessly probably repeat this, where regardless of my relationship with my mom would arm me since like age 6, 5. The first time when I got my first knuckle brass, the first time she kept giving me pepper spray, and she was very clear on, look, the world isn't nice. This is what you need to know how to operate, right? And in the short times that I went to middle school, I don't know what the American equivalent was, like when I'm like 12 or 13. I left school when I was 15. But the school would kept taking away these tools, right? They kept calling my mom. And my mom was very clear. I had a job. I was one of the few kids in my school that had a job. And especially in the winter, like, you know, you stand up when it's, you get up when it's dark, you go to work, you go home when it's dark because the sun goes down at 4 p.m. And she was very, very clear. She's like, y'all can keep taking this because I refuse to accept that y'all don't want my kid to be self-protected. I'll keep giving her new ones. You can take it every day. I'll give her new ones every single day. But unless you are able to provide protection for my child every single day, you and I are not having this conversation.
That's right. Pick one. Pick one. You got to commit. You know, if you don't want me to take responsibility for my safety, then you take responsibility for my safety. But if you're going to take responsibility for my safety, show your ass up when I call you. You're on call then. I mean,
it becomes even harder because you are supposed to prevent from me having to call you. That's what safety is, right? Because every safety we have set up right now is all an aftermath.
That's right.
Me having to call, me having to, that's all based on things already happening and then someone having to intervene. No, that's if you are taking away my sense of, over my possibility of protection, you better prevent.
That's right. And that's the thing, right? Is it's like safety is a feeling. I feel safe. Safety isn't actually a tangible thing. It is a feeling. And like, so if I'm armed, I feel safe. If I'm unarmed, I don't feel safe. Like that is, the gun is what makes me feel safe. Like the weapon is what makes me feel safe. So it is giving me a sense of security. It is giving me that feeling. So I don't know how you're going to guarantee that you make me feel a certain way, but your best bet is to make sure that there's no threat. And I don't know how you're going to do that. Like,
and then as a culture, we have agreed on the parameters of what that safety is can feel like. Because all these, you know, leftovers online being like, oh, you know, words are hurting me. They're making me feel unsafe. I need a safe space. We are all agreeing that that's not the safety spectrum we're touching on. Mm-hmm. Whereas I get to use my self-defense if you are, you know, in 30 feet marching towards me. Right. And I believe there's a potential actual threat, like, because if a kid that is 2 feet one, I don't fucking know how you know American sizes, but you know what I mean, if a kid is running up towards me with a stick, there's clearly no threat of my livelihood or safety. So we have parameters set that are stated very clearly. This is valid, this is not valid. So if someone is running away from you and they're 100 meters and you shoot them in the back, you're going to have the problem, not the, like, regardless, right? Look, so there's all these parameters.
Yeah. That makes sense, right? I mean, it's, and I think that's, I think, and it's, and I think people are pretending like they don't know that, you know, like, you know, like,
so
you
telling
me that, you know, that I'm erasing you with my words and disappearing you, and that's the equivalent of genocide. It's like,
oh my god,
yeah, I've heard it, and it's tiresome, but it's like, no, you don't get to say that. You don't get to just expand this thing to mean nothing, because now it's like you don't feel safe. What? Because if I don't play along with you in some way, and I don't get on board with your bullshit, and I don't co-sign your shit, then I've killed you in some way. Like, I just.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I've been meaning to ask you because look, I'll always take any possibility and opportunity to make fun of the leftovers. Like, I'm very public about that. So there's this video again going viral of a security camera of a armed with a firearm robber going into a cafeteria, demanding the money from the people, you know, people in the cafeteria and the register, while waiting, you know, walking around with his gun. No, I'm here to collect money. And one of the customers pulls out his gun and shoots him. Mm-hmm. Right. And the comments under that are all like, well, why he, I'm sorry. The comments were, first of all, why did he have to kill him? He wasn't in an immediate danger of his life. And And my favorite, my absolute favorite one was like, but we didn't know his intention. I'm like, no, no, motherfucker, you waving a gun in my face is definitely showing me your attention. Intention. Like, that's directly showing me your intention. And what one of the, just like one of these, like, oh, you know, men need to stop. Let's teach our kids to stop rape. Stop raping women. Right, like, it's one of those phrases that sounds really like a solution. Yeah. So one of those phrases that is recurring is Americans really much value their material over human life. And I'm like, we're like, no, that person who came in with a gun chose that his life is worth less.
That's right.
Than material.
I value my stuff more than his life. He values my stuff more than his life. We're in agreement. We are actually on the same page. Like,
oh my God.
There's no disparity.
So what I wanted to hear your opinion about is, like, how did we get to the point where we're always like, why did the clearly bad guy had to be shot? Mm.
Okay.
Instead of, why did the bad guy choose to do bad things?
Right. So that's not my responsibility. Understanding is not my response. I don't owe anybody understanding, right? There's a lot of that. Like, that is part of a larger, I'm going to say, contagion on social media, where people think that we owe people understanding. This person might be having a bad day, and you just need to No, I fucking don't. You need to get your shit under control. You don't get to just go ape shit on me because you're having a bad day. Now, I can acknowledge you're having a bad day, and I can easily contribute to that if you keep your shit up. Like, keep up that bullshit, and I'll show you what a bad day looks like. You know, like,
I'll give you something to cry about.
No shit. I'm like, no, not today. Not today. So it's like, and it's like this idea that I'm supposed to understand the motivations behind people's bad choices. And it's like, I don't need to understand that because I'm not the one that's fucked up. The person that's fucked up needs to understand what's driving them to make stupid decisions. And they need to fix that shit before they're met with the consequences of stupidity, because those consequences are running neck and neck with his self-awareness. Okay. It's kind of like that meme where, like, the bus comes in and then here comes the train. And it's like your bad choices meets consequences. They're two mutually exclusive things, and they don't have to meet if you don't put the bus on the tracks. But what the fuck are you doing putting buses on rail tracks? Like, that doesn't make any sense. So the idea that, you know, and look, we can argue about whether or not that person needed to be put down or whether they just needed to be maimed, right? And you can argue that maybe a trained professional would think about that and say, maybe I'll just cap them in the knee, right? But the average person who's being faced with that threat is going straight for center mass, and they're not thinking about whether or not they owe that person more consideration than what they've given them.
Right. And as someone who has been stabbed, and I'm sharing a lot of details right now, I guarantee you that it would have not, and meaning, like, it has hurt a part of my body.
Right.
It would have not stopped me doing something. So being shot in the knee would not prevent you from continuously still using the firearm that you chose to bring in and wave in people's faces. Right. Like, it would not do anything.
That's a gamble.
It wouldn't do anything.
Right.
Right.
And I don't know you. Right. I don't know how far you're willing to go on this thing. Right. So, and I don't know what's driving you, and I'm not here to figure that out. I'm just here to defend myself because you're an armed person demanding my shit for no fucking reason. And so
with a gun in my face,
with a gun. Correct. And so it's a perceived threat. Now, all of that could have been avoided if he didn't go in there. And most criminals, if you go and read, like, criminology reports, right, and you ask, and they interview criminals and ask them why they do what they do and who do they target and why, right? They'll tell you that they're already convicted. It doesn't matter. They're already doing the time, and they're happy to be candid about it. When people talk about rape and they say, well, how do you pick your victim? Easiest access. I'm looking for certain features. Is she wearing a skirt? Easier than pants. Is her hair long or short? Does she have heels on or does she have sneakers on? Is she, you know, does she have somebody with her or is she alone? Is it in the dark or is it at night? What is the likelihood and what is the risk of me getting caught? They're listing this off, honestly. They'll tell you why they do what they do. I mean, they're fucked up.
Right. But this is also why they don't try to rob a motor club.
Correct. They don't go into the Hell's Angel bar and ask them for their money. They go into a fucking convenience store where there's, you know, where a guy's behind plexiglass and, you know, and somebody.
Grandpa.
Yeah. And grandpa. Right. So, you know, that they planned this, they cased it out and they were looking at the lowest possible risk. Higher crime rates in places where people are disarmed is because less likelihood to get caught or suffer any sort of consequence. Right. And when politicians literally tell you there is no consequence for stealing up to $1,000 worth of shit, then they're just going to steal $1,000 worth of shit. So it's like, you know, whatever. So when somebody comes in and does that, it's not like they did this without any consideration.
Right.
They thought they could get away with it is what right. happened. It's like getting caught in a lie. You tried to lie and you tried to get away with it, but then I caught you and now you're coming clean. And you say, sorry, you're not really sorry that you lied. You're sorry that you got caught, you know? 100%. And that's exactly, and that's what happened with this guy. Same thing. You, it's not that you regret what you did. You regret
also, you're dead.
Caught. Yeah.
You're right. Dead.
Well, his last thought when he drew his last breath
Oops.
Was probably like, fuck.
Oops.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then you have the left defending you. So you still have that, I guess, in your name.
It doesn't make any sense that this is the straw that they grasp for, though, because I've heard it in other arguments as well. In cases where I actually sympathize with their side, but their arguments are dog shit. And I'm just like, you know, like you could have done better, but it's almost like you got this right by accident. Like you just guessed the answer, but you can't actually Question show mark? Your work. Yeah, you can't actually show your work and how you got there. You just kind of guessed it. You know, it's like, I have no idea what 12 times 12 is. Fine.
Multiple choice, B.
Yeah, it's like, you know, and it's like, do you know how to get 12 times 12 is 144? No. I'm going to make some shit up right now and say it in the most intellectual way possible, but I don't know how the fuck I got there. I mean, they just guessed right and back into it. So it's like, And to me, it's just like, okay, so you didn't really think this through. You know, so you hear stuff, like they become apologetic for the worst possible elements of society, you know, and they're incapable of condemning bad things because they feel like that compromises their position. And it's like, no, you can say holding up people at a store is wrong. People defending themselves when they feel threatened is a natural consequence. Maybe don't steal shit, right? And then say, I wish it never came to that. It's still tragic. You don't like to hear about people dying. You can hold space for both and they don't contradict each other. You can say, fuck, it you know,
oh my-
resulted in a death, but not actually say it was okay what he did, you know?
Listen, so we, using exactly this, so we had a mass shooting in Czech Republic 2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
Did you know? Okay, mass shooting, University of Prague. Guy took out, after, I don't want to say, mass shooting, Prague. 14 people were killed and 22 were injured. There's footage. It's quite brutal. Like you can hear him tick, 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 tick. He went on the top of the, you know, a balcony of the university and just started mass shooting. And I know why it didn't get as much as media rep as people hoped it would for. Because before our prime minister had spoken about it, it's going wild. Media is on it. See, the world is going to shit, mass shootings, blah, blah, blah. And then our minister said, I don't want to take away from the tragedy of this situation, but incidents like this can never be prevented, regardless of how much we want to. Which is a very real,
yeah.
right?
Right?
There's no legislation yeah. against this.
No.
Right. Just for a reference, right. Czech Republic has excellent gun laws. It's a much a pro gun country. It doesn't have a pro gun culture, but it's a pro gun country. Mm-hmm. It has, you know, tests like a driver's license. It has excessive tests, but right, he was very clear. Like, you cannot legislate against this. Like,
right.
Batshit crazy people will always do batshit crazy. There's no making it harder or something.
No.
And after that, media went quiet. Because that was a sense of realism, reality that he brought that is not right. It's not fun for the media to riff off of, because it's like, well, look at this guy being like all, you know, rational,
right,
and holding both things.
That's right. Being able to truly sympathize with victims, and simultaneously condemn the act, but also understanding there was no scenario where we were going to
nothing could have prevented this.
Right. Short of me being clairvoyant, that's not a thing. So, and I think, you know, and that's a thing too. It's like when I see people talking about mass shootings here, you know, the reality of our history is that it used to be that people were taught how to shoot in school. That was normal. You brought your rifle with you in high school. That was totally normal. Like that's not, you know, and then you took a shooting class, and that was no different than home economics and science class. You went and did the thing, you know, that was normal. And so the reality is that, and we didn't have the same mass shootings. We didn't, that was not a trend. So when we start examining this kind of behavior, right, that's like examining what causes people to take up addiction, right? It's not the drug that did it. It's where their head was at and what they were trying to cope with. And if you can get to the root of the problem, you can fix all of its manifestations and all of the symptoms that you're seeing. Addiction isn't just some random thing you're born with, unless you're a crack baby, in which case, I guess. But like, I mean, but short of that, like as an adult, you're, you know, like you chose alcohol to cope with your issues. Okay, fine. But you have issues. It's not the alcohol, it's the issues, because you wouldn't be running from your life if it was that fucking awesome, you know, like, and that's, you know, and it's so the same thing, or like, you're not trying to lash out against some other underlying issue. And it's like, and every fucking time, mental illness, they're on drugs, you know, like mental drugs, like they're on some sort of SSRI thing, like they're, you know, antidepressants, they're on, you know, they're on some sort of, they have a manifesto. I mean, fucking come on. Like,
I want a manifesto, but not for mass murder. I like, it's like, I never thought about having a manifesto. Like, this is my code of conduct for life.
Right. But like, it's fucking crazy. Like they have these, and it's like, okay, are we going to totally ignore the fact that like this person's cheese slid off their cracker a while ago and nobody fucking paid attention? The red fucking flags out here are fucking glaring. They're literally online telling you, hey, I'm about to fuck some shit up. And the FBI looks at it and like, okay, sounds bad. See you on the other side. Well, like, you
right. Which then comes to if you have a stronger culture, then people who fall between the cracks are noticed and they're pulled into the culture instead of ostracized for them. Because this is the thing. Culture requires responsibility.
Yeah.
It requires you to take an active participational space up in culture.
Yep.
And, you know, take notice around you.
Right. So, I mean, that's my beef with the pro-life movement, right? Is that I don't care that you're pro-life, pro-choice or whatever. I said, but if you're going to be pro-life, then you can't be waiting at the finish line at the fucking clinic. Your ass needs to be at the beginning of the race, all the way through the race, handing out fucking water and energy bars to the fucking marathon runners. And that is to say that you should be there edifying women the entire way, not just at the end to condemn them, right? So, if you are pro-life, then you need to be there along the way, because guess who else is there? Pro-choice is also there, telling them that this is, you know, feeding them whatever they want them to hear. You should be there with the counter message in the same fucking race running alongside. It should be two voices and two conscience sitting on your shoulders, giving you both sides of the argument and letting you know what's up. And you should be there to follow fucking through. If they choose to have the child, then all of your judgment goes out the door. You shut the fuck up and swallow your pride. You sit there and you help them get on their feet, either help them to become moms, help them to process an adoption process, help them to do whatever the process is. You should be there with resources ready to follow through. So own it, because that's exactly what pro-choice does. Pro-choice says, I'm coming with clinics and doctors ready to go. Pro-life is like, don't do it.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, okay, so you didn't show up with any resources. You need to start showing up with resources, and you need to show up with a real message, you know? And it's like, and you don't have right. one. So that's right. my beef, right? Is that you weren't there to cultivate the culture that led to one decision or another. There was a culture that guided her one way or the other. Now, women who don't get abortions versus women who do get abortions, whatever that influence was, there was something, okay, one way or the other. And you need to drill down to what the fucking secret sauce is and tap into that culturally and figure it out. And that's it. And that's your job. Your job isn't to sit at clinics and then just scream at them with a fucking placard. So do something, you know? And I think it takes a certain amount of proactivity to start getting people on board with a lifestyle or a choice or a ethic. And it takes a commitment from people who advocate for it to do that, because you need to teach it then, because it's not getting taught. Like,
right. I feel so. This is such a complex thing. I've had this conversation with a husband last week where I see that in the realm of people who advocate for responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. Integrity, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It's very easy, and I'm not being void of that myself either. It's very easy to ostracize those who don't, right? And be like, okay, well, those are the dummies. And again, I'll always cycle back to this. I'm just having an honest moment. But the thing is, because everyone's stuck to their, you know, camera and the glittery, shiny thing. But I do think it's a proper leader in the world the way it is right now has to anticipate that this is the way the world is right now. And if you value certain things, you better fucking make them shiny, or the message of it shiny, so it at least gets eyes on it.
Correct. Yes.
Right. Whereas us individual people want to be just fucking leave me alone. I just want to exist, which then only creates a bigger gap between responsibility, you know, extreme ownership, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas like, no, you have to again, it's another extreme. You have to opt in to the current culture, whether that's fucking being like, and I'm using a, you know, simplistic example, becoming an influencer, like that's, you need to make sure that your message is being heard and that it's being worth watching or listening to by being perceived as somewhat part of the culture instead of the weirdo that lives on the hill, even though that might be the goal, right? You have to be part of the culture. Otherwise, you're just another extreme.
Yeah. I would say Jordan Peterson kind of carved that out and proved it out, right? He has gone on record several times saying, I didn't expect to fill up an auditorium on a lecture about personal responsibility. I didn't think anybody would come. And it turns out that a lot of people came, and a lot of young men came. And it's like, and he's like, I didn't realize how starved people were for a message like mine in the 12 steps, right? And look, it doesn't matter if you agree with him or not. The point is that there is a void that people know is there and can't describe it. Like, there is definitely an empty space that's going to get filled by something, you know? And the idea of him stepping out of his academic space and into a more cultural space to impart what he understands about human beings and their psychology and what is self-edifying, and building that kind of momentum inside an individual to where you're not relying on other people to affirm you, but rather you are self-affirming, is a good thing, right? I think he's that example. I think so.
Right.
I mean, I don't think, I know people hate him and he can be on his own polarizing, I guess.
Love him.
But I think he did a good job. I think he did net good.
There is a, and I'll have to, I'm blanking on names because I suck at names, for it doesn't matter how smart I get, I suck at names, but there is a fitness influencer who has a huge, I want to say she's in 100K followers. And gently, softly, she sometimes shares a little bit about her individual lifestyle. She's a little bit of, she's prepper-ish.
Okay.
Right. So she's not vocalizing constantly prepper stuff. She's a fitness model. And when she speaks about her lifestyle, she's like, oh, you know, we purchased ammo, or we started canning for 3 months. And it And that's what we need.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Not as some kind of, you know, I'm trying to lure people in, but just like, hey, this is a normal person, in a healthy thinking person, right, that participates, is part of our culture, that also thinks a little bit outside of the box. And just lets me play with these thoughts instead of being like, because the preppers are like, you need to prepare, war is coming. I'm like, you batshit crazy.
Yeah, it's too much.
You're too far.
You're gimmicky. Right. It sounds to start gimmicky. And I think, and it starts to sound like a snake oil salesman as opposed to, you know, and like some tinfoil hat shit. And what people want is something that is consumable, right? I can consume this piece of information. Right.
And the other way around would be, if we're going to use like city versus rural, is someone who is a, you know, a, let's say a farmer, and who also says like, hey, but we should also look about the history of, I don't know, racism. And just like in between there, not making it their thing, because then we're like, you're fucking batshit, you fucking city blue person, right? It needs to be healthy, as in it needs to be an invitation to thought, and conversation by people who participate in culture.
Well, I think if you have some sort of successful thing you're doing, whether it's for fitness, whether you're like into like, you know, farming, and you're teaching agriculture or whatever it is, what other trade you're doing, right? Mm-hmm. People, the thing with influencers is people want to emulate you. People want to be like you. And the thing is there's more to you than your fitness, right? She might be instructing on fitness, and that might be her forte and her strength in terms of knowledge base. But she doesn't have a well-adjusted life because all she does is work out. Like, she has a well-adjusted life because there are other aspects to her and there are other features to who she is that come together, and physical fitness is the one thing she knows the most about, but she does other things that feed into that overall fitness and well-adjusted life, you know?
Now, before we end the episode, I am confident that you wouldn't just leave without hitting like, without hitting subscribe, without hitting that share button, right? You want to do that to me. I'm up in here connecting with people, wanting you to be a part of the conversation, and you would almost leave? Come on.
So when she says she's stocking up on ammo, look, she's not just working out all day. She works out, and then she goes and eats well, and then she gets outside and gets some fucking sunshine, and then she drinks a lot of water. She does all these other habits, and she also likes to feel prepared. You know, she also likes canning, and she also likes, you know, knowing the source of her food. So she grows it. I don't know, whatever the fuck it is. And she's going to give a hat tip to that. I'm not going to, you know, preach to you about this thing because I don't, you know, this is just something I do, but you should know that that's part of me. That's also a part of my well-adjusted life, is that I do this. I can things. I jar things. I have 3 months storage of shit or whatever. I also do that, and it makes me feel good. And it's something I do with the kids, or it's something I do with my husband, or it's something I do as a hobby, whatever, you know, I mean, but it should be that. I mean, there should be glimpses into that so that we don't get so siloed and we don't think that all I got to do is be fit and I'll be fine. And it's like, no, you're just going to have muscles and still be maladjusted. You still got to sort your shit and build out what that looks like with other healthy components of your life, you know? And I think, I think as influencers, it makes sense to kind of give us a glimpse behind the scenes and see what else you do, and see, and it gives the authenticity to the otherwise filtered life that we see, you know?
Yeah. Right. So on that note, let's round it up because I'm going to the gym.
Hey, okay.
I'm having a migraine. I still have my hand. I'm week 3 in a brace, but I'm doing leg day every day. I'm like, I'm building momentum here in behavior. So regardless, I'm going. So I'm going to go to the gym and we'll do this next week again. God damn it. This was good.
Yeah, it was. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Diamond and Demon series, share, like, comment, get angry, get happy, do all the things What's his name? Andy Frazella. Ooh, but I'm butchering his name. He says, pay your fee, which is, we're all doing this for free, air quotes. But it costs a lot of time and money. You have to pay the fee by sharing this, by, you know, telling other people, like, look, hey, you know, this podcast made me think about it. So pay your fee. We'll figure out our own term, hip term. But for now, we're borrowing Andy's term. Pay it forward, pay the fee, share it, everyone. See y'all next week.
Bye.